Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Skewed and Reviewed Skewedcast. I am Gareth, creator of Skewed and Reviewed, and you can catch us at sknr.net as we cover all things movies, games, television, travel, entertainment, pop culture, and more. You can also catch me on Pinal Central, pinalcentral.com, keyword Skewed, which is a network of newspapers that run our video game reviews. We have our Skewed and Reviewed magazine, and we will have the latest issue of that out in April, a little later than usual because of WonderCon at the end of the month. We want to make sure that we get our coverage for that in and not make it wait till the next issue at the end of the summer. And, of course, you can see our content on places from Sci-Fi Radio, Open Critic, and on Facebook, BJ Shays Geek Nation, and so many more. And I am joined, as always, with Justin and Joey Z. Michael is out. He had a little bit of dental work done today, so he just isn't up for extended chats. So, gentlemen, let's start off with the big news of the day as we record this. The big full trailer for Fallout, the Amazon series, which is coming on April 11th on Prime Video, just dropped. Joey Z, we will start with you. What were your impressions from this trailer?
I really liked the trailer. I had never been a huge fan of the Fallout series just because it's not my type of game. I've always thought they've had a great fan base and they've done a great job building content. And obviously they have a huge amount of games that they've released, so they've been very successful. I'm always skeptical whenever video games go to movies or TV shows because there's a high bar now, especially with The Last of Us just coming out recently that did so well, and they tend to have a bad track record. That, however, being said, this doesn't look like it's going to fall below the bar. This might set a new bar. I think that if you're a fan of the games, you're going to watch this trailer and you're going to recognize everything you want to see. I think if you're new to the series, kind of like I will be, you're going to be excited to see a post-apocalyptic, sci-fi-ish, survival, horror almost of an interesting show, where you're probably going to see a little bit of hope from this main character that they've described in the trailer, but then, you know, kind of get torn away as she has to survive in this, you know, hellish world. And on top of that, I still recognize a lot of actors' faces and a lot of fun names. I won't spoil any if anybody hasn't seen it yet, but I think you should go check it out. And the budget's there. I mean, what didn't look realistic? Well, I didn't even see any problems with the CGI in the trailer, which is great news because, man, you never know. I mean, even Wakanda Forever, sometimes you saw some CGI in the trailer, and you're like, oh, I don't know. The Aquaman, sometimes you see a little bit of things in the trailer. You go, I don't know, but this one all looked good. So I'm very excited to see how this series plays out on Amazon, how many episodes we're going to get, and where they're going to take the storyline.
Absolutely. And Justin, what do you have on this?
Yeah, I agree with Joey. It's it does look very good, and I will give Amazon absolute props. I think they're really on the bar, or on the ball, I should say, raising the bar for what televisions can look like. And I think it was one of the few things that was very good about the Lord of the Rings television series. And that kind of goes into my one. And I don't mean to be negative, but my only real concern is I think that show looked good before it came out, and it was a little, at least for me, a little bit of a disappointment in the direction they took it. That's kind of a different situation though, because the Lord of the Rings, you know, franchise is it's different than Fallout, and approaching it is very different. So I can understand how that's difficult, but in terms of what they absolutely nailed how everything looks in Fallout, the costume designs, like Joey said, that the CGI looks great, the environments look great. I think that what's going to be a little bit difficult to balance, and on what I'm curious how they approach it, is how they kind of balance the different elements in Fallout, because Fallout as a universe, and I think one of the things that makes it so captivating and popular, is that it's not really like your typical just post-apocalyptic setting. You know, there's many post-apocalyptic settings, you know, and even ones that have been done pretty well on screen, so like The Last of Us, for instance, that was another very well done adaption. But Fallout, kind of like Joey had mentioned, it has horror elements, it's got comedy elements, it's got pretty heavy sci-fi elements in there as well. So there's also a lot of lore behind, like, the, you know, how the ghouls work and the super ghouls and the Brotherhood of Steel, where they come from, and the Conclave. So I'm interested to see how they tackle all those elements, how they kind of interject some of the sort of comedic elements that's popular in Fallout, and how they introduce the different factions, like the Republic of California, and again the Conclave. I don't know if the Conclave is going to show up, but the Brotherhood of Steel is certainly there. So it's definitely a huge universe to tackle, and I'm really curious to see how they approach it. One thing I will also add is some of the casting is just totally on point. So Walter Goggins as a ghoul, I think that was just a really good sign that they kind of know how to cast these particular characters, because just, you know, he's just, not to say he's ghoulish, I don't mean to diss him in any way like that, but I just think casting wise he was definitely perfect for that kind of role, and it looks like he's going to be a pretty major character. So I'm really interested to see how they approach the whole story.
And to give you an idea just how good his makeup is, I read something recently where he said that he had fallen asleep in his trailer in between shooting, and he woke up and he looked in the mirror and he said he nearly jumped a mile because he forgot he was wearing the makeup. And when he saw, you know, the reflection that came back, it definitely was a shock to him at first, because he said, you know how it is, you wake up and you're a little disoriented, and then you look up in the mirror and it's like, oh, and then it's, oh, that's right, filming a movie. And I just think the look just looks perfect, and the tone, the mix of, you know, little bit of action, everything isn't always quite what you expect it to be, twist and turns around the corner, but some, you know, kind of quirky retro comedy mixed with a weird future. And I think this just goes to show you what happens now that they, for, I never understood why back in the day that it never happened this way, but now that the studios are actively involved with making these films rather than just basically selling over the rights and, oh yeah, I'm okay with the script. But you remember how they used to be, where there'd be no visuals that looked like the game, and the storylines were different, and it was just essentially whatever game they were filming in name only, and there was very little connection to the games. Now the franchises are actively developed with the people who made the games, who actually, in many cases, some like Ubisoft, have their own film division to set these things up and make it right. And I think we're seeing the benefits of that. Plus, with the advent of streaming, where they can say, hey, we can do 10, 11 episodes and R-rated content, and we don't have to squeeze everything into 2 hours and PG-13 it. I think that helps. So another thing I wanted to mention, and this one really got my attention, was Deadpool and Wolverine. So we've got it coming out July 26th, and yes, I am very aware that that is right around when San Diego Comic-Con is going to be hitting, because I will be there July 24th, 25th, 26th, so I would be shocked if there wasn't something going on, unless Disney decides to do something at their D23 Expo, but by that time it's already out a few weeks. But interesting little bit of news here. So this is really going to get the speculation going. Actor Carrie Son, who plays one of my favorite supporting characters in the film, the cab driver Dopinder, who wants to basically be a mercenary and has a secret lust to take out some of the bad guys along the way, has told Variety this week that the movie is absolutely packed with cameos. He won't reveal any, and to date, the only confirmed cameo as Jennifer Garner back as Electro. Vinnie Jones did reveal that he has turned down reprising Juggernaut, but the report is the new MCU version of Juggernaut is ultra secretive. There are a lot of surprises, but let me just say about the movie, a lot of people were traveling to London. He said he's unsurprised Hugh Jackman is back, because Ryan Reynolds had actually been planning this for years, and during a lunch break while filming the second one, he actually mentioned one day that he'd already started a conversation with Hugh about getting him to appear in it. So, Justin, good news or just hype?
I think it's good news. I mean, I do think this is probably going to be the major film event for Marvel this year. I was looking at the calendar because, you know, I watched Dune 2 this week, and I afterwards was like, oh, you know, I haven't really looked at what exactly is coming out later this year. And one of the things I noted looking at the whole calendar is that of the movie, it's going to be a very light Marvel year, actually a very light superhero movie year in general. I honestly think that Deadpool and Wolverine is like their headline movie this year, as far as that I can tell. It's definitely going to be the one I think that has the most hype behind it. So with that in mind, I think it's a good opportunity for them to bridge the two kind of the Fox franchises of superhero movies and the Marvel movies. So it might be a little bit of just marketing hype. You never know, but I do think that there's a good opportunity there to not just have some of the characters that are very popular now within the Marvel movies, but maybe have some of those characters interacting with some of the new characters that are being introduced. And it'd also be an opportunity to introduce those characters, or at least the Marvel version that will be, or I should say the Disney version of the Fox characters that they now have after the merger with Fox. So that's kind of what I'm expecting. Maybe we get to see the first iteration of some of the X-Men that we might be seeing later down the line. Maybe we see some of the kind of X-Men adjacent characters introduced, and potentially with Fantastic Four as well. So I do think that there are probably going to be some big surprises. So we'll have to just wait till July to see that.
And Joey C, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I completely agree with what Justin said, and I also think that it makes sense. This is their blockbuster movie. This is in the summer. We've had a lull, to say the least, recently in Marvel movies / superhero movies. Expectations have been kind of a letdown. People are looking to get back into the theaters. Deadpool can do no wrong in my mind. So if you're taking it from the idea of we're going to bring in all these characters to riff back off of, I think that's going to be hilarious. I think it's going to make you remember this movie, which needs to happen. I mean, having Hugh Jackman come back out and play Wolverine again is not an easy thing to do. I mean, we know a lot of times he said he didn't want to do it. Also, one thing I didn't think about, and I've kind of read it a little bit into this, is that Ryan Reynolds is actually, I believe, married to Blake Lively.
Correct.
And Blake Lively is essentially now best friends with Taylor Swift. And there's a rumor that she might somehow find her way into this movie. I can't imagine her being in a rated R movie, but at the same time, that would be, I mean, Disney's dream.
The rumor I heard was Dazzler.
Oh, really? Okay,
that's been the rumor I've heard for a few months, but they keep that really quiet. But that has been a long-standing rumor that she was going to show up as Dazzler, and that's going to bring the house down. I mean, there's just, yeah.
Yeah, you want to know how to make $1 billion, you put Taylor Swift in anything. So I think that...
Well, I mean, the beautiful thing about it is there are so many rumors about this film, from this is when we're going to see the Fantastic Four for the first time, that they're going to film, this is going to be their intro, and that you're going to see all kinds of characters, you know, old, new, and alternate versions as well. And of course, you know, Iger is very clear from the beginning. This is an R-rated film. We are not going to shy away from making R-rated Deadpool content. And, you know, that is very interesting. And because it kind of opened the floodgates, because they said, hey, by the way, Blade is going to be R-rated as well. We're not going to be doing PG-13 vampires. And while I understand that these are essentially family films, and people say, oh, Disney doesn't make R-rated films. Sure they do. They made tons of them. They just didn't make them under the Disney label. They made them under Touchstone, Silver Screen, Caravan, Dimension, so on and so forth. You know, as I like to say, people forget the first Scream film was made under Disney ownership. Let's not say they're not afraid to go down that path. But I like the idea of them, you know, looking at some of these darker, like, I mean, can you imagine an R-rated Ghost Rider?
I mean, it's what we've been doing for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, like, truly hit the source material. So That is really interesting. And, you know, and it's funny because I wanted to transition over to something Bob Iger said. He was at a Morgan Stanley conference in San Francisco just 2 days ago as we record this. And he was talking about the state of Disney's output, box office return, strike-induced box office drought that had been impacting everybody. And I'm not going to read like everything, but he basically talked about they're doing a lot to improve the film slate. And he said one the three approaches that we've had to look at is one that you have to kill things off that you no longer believe in. And that's not easy to do in this business because you've already sunk some cost into getting it going, or there's a relationship with creative elements, or, you know, your employees in the creative community. But he said it's not an easy thing, but you got to make the tough calls. If something's just not coming together, you have to be willing to say, okay, we're going to pull the plug on it now, rather than say, okay, let's hope we can pull this all together. And he said they're spending a lot of time with the creators. They're watching the films. They're offering detailed notes and engaging in what they call a respectful process to, you know, help improve the things. And this had gone on about something I'd mentioned, how there was some discussion that when the Marvels and some of the other films were done, it was during the extremely strict COVID protocols that limited, even the director couldn't be on set. They had to be in another area watching on camera, relaying in their directions. And some of the executives had kind of implied that some of these directors were essentially working unsupervised. And that's why perhaps why some of the content that we're seeing at various studios hasn't been up to the standards. But really quick, I wanted to just touch on a couple of things and then get your feedback. First off, he talked about the idea of superhero fatigue and franchise fatigue, saying a lot of people think that it's there. But the point is, they want good films. They want great films. And if you build it great, they will come. And there are countless examples about that. He goes, you know, you look at Oppenheimer. He said that is essentially a perfect film. The focus on that was great. People came out for it. And he says, we've reduced the output of Marvel, both the number of films and the number of television shows. And that becomes critical. But I feel good about the team that we have. He says, I feel good about the IPs we're making. I talked to a lot of the projects we look at, even that are years ahead of their from coming out, and, you know, it's there. So I'm very intrigued by this, and this is the one that I wanted to really highlight. He says, the upcoming Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is the first film under Disney control since they acquired Fox, is one of the better franchises and believes that that and Deadpool and Wolverine will be one of the most successful Marvel movies that we had in a long time. So that compared with the other trailer that dropped today for Inside Out 2, which is getting huge amounts of hits, the original release trailer and this one, this is already shaping up to be a massive hit for them. So I will start with you, Joey Z. Is that, which I think is a blip based on their track record, is the Disney drought over and are the good fortunes about to start rolling again?
Yeah, I think there's a good argument to say that. We might have a little lull come here in December when we're discussing what, you know, we remembered, but I do think that Deadpool is going to be a hit. Like, I recently saw that Inside Out 2 trailer, and, I mean, again, it's not my type of movie, but everyone that I know that's watched the first one is very excited for that one, and it looks like it's going to meet expectations there. The superhero drought thing is an interesting dilemma or conversation piece because we have kind of entered a realm of, okay, well, what worked before was the Robert Downey Jr.'s, the big names, and a 10-year span to get people into the theaters watching these movies. It was a success. I think if we went back and rated the movies, we'd probably go, second Iron Man was okay, third Iron Man was okay, Thor 2 was eh, you know, like, and we'd go, we could nitpick. But when they came out, I don't think there was any complaints. So I think now, if we were to release those types of movies, which maybe those are what coming out now, the Ms. Marvels that people aren't really engaging with and things like that, we're just a little bit more critical because we are getting that fatigue. But to the other side of that argument, there is, well, are those movies at the same standard? You know, is Ms. Marvel's as good as Iron Man 2 or 3 was, or that kind of a thing? For me, I think it just comes down to the fact that, you know, we switched, you know, Endgame ended a game. You know, it ended a game of Marvel for a lot of fans because it was a switch. There was going to be a completely new introduction of characters. And when you do that, you're going to lose a fan base. You know, some amount of it. Not all of it. I'm around. I'll watch any movie. I don't care. I love the Marvel movies. But I think that that argument is valid and that Disney has gone, okay, well, let's instead pump the brakes on some of things that might not make us as much money and dump more of it into the more offshoot franchises of the Marvel properties or the Fox properties or things like that. For instance, like Deadpool, that is a rated R genre movie in the same kind of genre as the Marvel movies themselves were. So I think that it's definitely a fair argument that there's a little fatigue, but I think that in general, good art will always rise to the top. Essentially, Oppenheimer was that a great example for that as well. That movie is amazing. And it's not something that I think most people would go to the theaters for to watch normally. For me personally, I think that, you know, come December, maybe we won't have a big blockbuster movie that besides maybe, I'm trying to think of one that would really capture us. You know, maybe the Joker or Gladiator, maybe not the Marvel property movies. But I do think we'll be sitting here and going, I'm still excited to see what this next phase is come next year, since we're going to be putting more time into just a couple movies as opposed to just a massive amount, let's release six a year kind of thing that they were doing for so long. That was just too much, and I think we are ready for just, you know, a little bit more honing and a little bit more post-COVID attempts to making these great movies.
Absolutely. Justin, your take, please.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, and it's also, I think there's a lot of, just like with boasting, it's not monocausal. There's like multiple factors at play, and I think there is a, I don't think it's as easy to summarize into just superhero fatigue is really what's going on. I think a huge element of this, kind of what Joey's mentioning, is that, at least for me, I think when Marvel was building towards like the Thanos saga kind of thing, it was back then it was novel. So I think that's a great point that there were a lot of movies back then, a lot of Marvel movies that were, you know, I don't think there were any that have ever been low quality or bad, but there have been some that, you know, maybe you wouldn't watch a second time. I think Thor 2 is a great example of that. I mean, it's and even Iron Man 2, those were two good examples of, you know, they're just not quite as good as many of the other great ones. So but the difference back then is that even those movies were building towards something that I think a lot of people were really highly anticipating. And it was the whole build up to Endgame. I would say Infinity War and Endgame was really the event. I think all of the little breadcrumbs and pieces that they had been peppering over the course of many years, I think that was novelty. Unfortunately, you can't replicate that again. That's just something that's lost because it's no longer. Now, you could do a second saga, which is kind of what they're sort of building to and trying to build to by introducing a new villain. But it's difficult to kind of, you know, capture that magic twice. That said, though, I don't think it's as simple as just, oh, they can't do it again or it's not going to be popular again. I do, you know, fundamentally, I think it is. A kind of simple case that if they make good movies that people want to see, then people will go to the theaters for them. And I think Deadpool will likely prove that this year. One approach that they're doing, I think, is fairly smart, is that they are kind of stepping back with some of the franchises that you would think, you know, oh, you would absolutely just do these every year, like a Star Wars movie or like a Marvel movie. But if you think about it, you kind of look at what their strategy is this year. They're actually really heavily focusing on the Fox properties that tend to make money. So the Planet of the Apes movies have all been pretty successful, if I remember correctly.
The new ones especially, yes.
Yeah, so financially those have been Fox's better movies in terms of, you know, having a good track record for success. Deadpool 1 and 2 both extremely successful at the box office. And those are kind of the two headlining movies for Disney this year. And, you know, don't forget the other one that's kind of dubious as to whether it's successful financially, at least at the box office, but tends to be successful over long periods of time, is Alien, which we have an Alien movie as well coming this year. So it does seem to be a pretty heavy Fox year that's doing like the heavy lifting for Disney, it seems like, which I think is actually probably a good approach, because it allows them to kind of step back and figure out what novel kind of a new approach they can take with their more popular franchises. You know, fatigue is a thing, but you know, you look at it, there's franchises that you can make movie after movie after movie after movie and keep it going, but you know, essentially forever. I mean, you can use other examples too, games, you know, Nintendo makes Zelda games and Mario games, you know, and Pokemon games for infinity, and they can be totally successful because they're able to tweak the formula over time. Or Call of Duty, James Bond, Fast and Furious. I mean, there's many examples of very long running franchises that, you know, depending on the approach, can be pretty successful, and you don't really get the, oh, you know, there's really no such thing as James Bond fatigue. But again, it is a different apples to oranges kind of situation, because James Bond movies are typically spread out over many years. But the point being that you can probably keep a franchise going for a very long period of time as long as you have the right approach.
And just taking a quick peek at December, and of course musical chairs with the strikes and delays, but the next Karate Kid movie is planned, the Lord of the Rings War of the, I can never say it right, Rohirrim is due, and Disney's holiday entry is Mufasa the Lion King, the next film in the live-action version, with Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner leading the voice cast that returns from The Lion King. So that, and there's also Sonic the Hedgehog 3 is still scheduled from Paramount. Now, interestingly enough, they're still planning on putting Nosferatu and Jordan Peele's next horror film out on Christmas Day. But, you know, that can change and likely will. I can't imagine two horror films being released on Christmas Day, but interestingly enough. Now, Justin, you mentioned big franchises. We got word also that the currently untitled 8th Mission Impossible feature has rolled back into production. Tom Cruise was spotted with longer hair in the UK this week and was filming a scene. Now, get this, 61 years old, he has on a black leather jacket, and they were filming a car chase scene. And, you know, they were talking about the scene was very action-oriented, obviously, as a car chase would be. He was later seen fist-bumping some of the crew members who had worked to ensure that the scene had been done safely, and Cruise was filming the scenes well into the evening. And so they talked about, apparently it's come out that the most complicated sequence of the film had yet to be shot. They did say about 40% of it had been filmed before the strike. So we'll start with you, Joey Z. What do you think, and what's your excitement level for the next Mission Impossible?
I am very excited for this part two. I loved Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to hear that it kind of got an underwhelming box office numbers when it first came out, and that people were kind of mixed on it. I'm wondering if that has to do with a little bit of the confusingness of technology that was in the movie. It dealt with a little bit more AI kind of things, a little bit more holograms. But, I mean, it brought the whole story full circle, brought all the characters back, called back to the original, which was great to see clips from. And then Tom Cruise, as we all know, goes above and beyond when it comes to stunts. He will shell out time, money, and his body to make sure that these are done to a level that no other movie really gets to. I mean, I saw a 20-minute preview of the ramp that they had to build for his motorcycle jump scene in the first movie. I mean, it's insane. I mean, the guy is crazy, and he's pretty old, so it's wild. I'm glad to hear that they're already filming this one. I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing it. Is this a part three, or is there only going to be two parts? I can't remember what they said.
This is it, and there's some question about whether the franchise goes on from here, but of course I would think that even if they call it quits right here with Tom, there's always going to be the window to reboot it with either him or someone else. But I, you know, I thought the last one was great, and I would definitely think this should do well. But you're right. I think the AI thing confused some people. But, you know, here's the thing. Mission Impossible films have always had kind of confusing plots because they twist and they turn and all that. And sometimes you're kind of sitting there going, okay, exactly what, okay, why didn't you do this? And why are we doing this? And who's the enemy on this? And so on. But the bottom line is they are, the stunts are great. I mean, who can forget him hanging on the side of the airplane? But for me, the one stunt that I looked at above all of them, aside from hanging on the plane and said, nope, 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 we have the hanging outside the skyscraper, which was a classic, and then the one where he jumped into the underwater, what was it? It was like a server bank, and they he legitimately held his breath during the whole sequence, and I'm like, how do you hold your breath that long? I mean, it's like, no, I would not be jumping into an underwater server and holding my breath for 6-7 minutes at a time. That's just not going to happen, but...
Yeah, you know? I hope people go out to see this movie because, I mean, we're not going to get many more Tom Cruise movies at this level. I mean, eventually your age will kick in and your body will give out. LeBron James will tell you that. So, I mean, I can't wait. I hope if they do reboot the series that they end this one with Tom and his character, and they, if they want to reboot it, maybe they go in a different direction with new characters because this is his movie. These are his legacy, you know, in a weird way. So it's I don't want to touch it after this because this is going to be his send-off for sure. And it's going to be an epic ending.
And Justin, your take, please.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think of the summer movies, it was actually, I liked Oppenheimer quite a bit, but, you know, it was a very thinking movie. It was a very well-made movie. I had some criticisms of its story structure, but Mission Impossible, it was just, I mean, on all, especially the newer ones, have all been just very, you know, I think quintessentially just, like, good, blockbuster, you know, exciting movies you just go to see during like a weekend on in the summer, they're so well made, and there's just something about them that I think kind of captures that sort of like magic of, you know, just making a very big spectacle movie that's just fun to watch. So I'm definitely looking forward to this one. It didn't really make a lot of sense to me that the last one didn't do well, and I guess I would attribute it to opening up against Oppenheimer and Barbie, which for whatever reason narratively, you know, seemed to gather all the attention at the time. So I do wonder if maybe it released in a different weekend, maybe it would have been more successful. But I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I am looking forward to this one. Just because, you know, like you guys said, I mean, people do get older. I think he may, you know, Tom Cruise is in very good shape. So I do think Mission Impossible is one of those series that as long as they can come up just with any real premise, they can kind of keep it going because it's really about the entertainment and the spectacle. And there's certain tropes, obviously, that they have to kind of do in each movie. But I think as long as they have a good premise, they'll keep making them, but they are kind of getting towards the end, just because, like you guys said, Tom Cruise is getting older, so maybe he has a few more left in them, maybe they kind of reboot the franchise in some way, it would be kind of sad to me if they didn't make them at all, just because, you know, you don't really get another movie where you talk about the specific scene that, you know, every single one has a scene in it and everyone knows, you know, it's really like what ends up becoming memorable about each one is like Gareth, you had mentioned, it's, you know, you remember the Burj Khalifa scene, or you remember the airplane, the hanging out of an airplane scene, or the motorcycle, like ramping a motorcycle off a cliff scene. Like those are, you don't see that in other movies so much. Usually in other movies, which can be great as well, usually you kind of see something more CG related, that's good as well, but you know, it's a different topic. So I'm looking forward to the next one, and I'll definitely be there to see it.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have a pretty decent summer. There's some very interesting things on the horizon. Two quick things I wanted to discuss. Number one is Warner Brothers has decided, with their continued cost-cutting measures, to shut down their Rooster Teeth streaming service. And also Warner Brothers related, we're hearing that the Dune TV series about the Bene Gesserit is essentially going to be set 10,000 years before the rise of Paul Atreides. It's going to have a bit of a tonal, well, not a bit of it. It's going to have a more of a change from its originally intended arc, and that it is going to be more closely connected to the recent films in terms of things. And I'm like, well, 10,000 years is a lot of time to work. So just quick comments. We'll start with you, Justin, on both of those. What do you make of all that?
All right, so I'll start with Dune, because I'm a bit of a Dune nerd. It's probably my favorite book. I'm a huge fan of the movies and the series in general. I'm kind of questioning the premise for this show. I'm obviously going to be interested in seeing what the approach is. It sounds interesting, and I think it's a wonderful universe to explore. But the Bene Gesserits aren't really exactly the good guys in
no.
Dune. Not to say, you know, Dune, I guess, is interesting because there's a lot of, like, kind of moral gray stuff going on in it. I mean, even in the popular movies when, you know, where Paul kind of struggles, and not to spoil much, but one of the things Paul struggles with is what the ramifications are of his choices. So he's not exactly Luke Skywalker, in terms of a hero, but, you know, the Bene Gesserits, if you had to kind of map out, who's the good guys and bad guys, the Bene Gesserits aren't really exactly on the good guys side. Telling a story about them, I think it could be very interesting. You know, they're very much within, like, the political, machinations, and I guess, if you kind of think about it from, like, a TV producer perspective, I guess the pitch to me, the way it would make sense is you kind of do a Game of Thrones style show. I mean, you know, Game of Thrones, most of its scenes are, you know, political maneuvering in nature. It's usually two popular characters kind of sitting in a room, two or more popular characters sitting in a room and talking, and then interspersed with, you know, a little bit of action. And I guess, you know, as long as you did, like, the set design right and the costume design right, and you got the right, you know, writing, or, you know, good writing and good characters and good political drama, I guess you could probably do a show about the Bene Gesserit, which is kind of like maneuvering the different houses against each other for some purpose. But I guess to me, one other kind of question mark about that is this all going to be original material, and if it is, then who's really writing it? Because that's one issue when you have writers kind of try to work within an existing franchise, and probably one of the major issues that I had with the Amazon Lord of the Rings show is that when you watch it, you can tell it's not the original writer. It does feel more like fan fiction. In a sense, you know, you can tell, okay, this Tolkien didn't write this. So similarly, you know, obviously Frank Herbert is no longer alive, and the Dune franchise is mostly handled by his son. But even that, you know, there's a huge difference between the Brian Herbert books and the Frank Herbert books. So if you kind of even remove it even more, and now you have, you know, a team of writers at Warner Brothers, writing original material about the Bene Gesserits long, long, long time before Paul comes about, how much is it going to actually feel like Dune? So that's what I'm kind of curious about. I guess what would make me feel more at ease about the whole project is if Denny was involved, director for the new Dune movies, if he was more kind of like directing how, because I think he absolutely gets what you know, Dune is about, and I think he tonally really knows how it really should be portrayed. So if he was very much involved, then I would feel a lot more at ease about it. I'll really quick just touch on Rooster Teeth. It's kind of a, you know, it's obviously sad to see a long time running institution go away. It's something that's been around for, gosh, 20 something years. I remember, you know, Red versus Blue and all the memes that Red versus Blue generated over the years, and, you know, remember all that fondly. But just like with anything, I think you know, I looked at kind of where Brewster Teeth ended up compared to, you know, where it started from, and it is very different. So it doesn't shock me too much, and you know, it's just, I guess, one of those sad things where you just you know, you can't really keep everything running forever. So hopefully a lot of those people, and I guess some of the projects will continue on, which just under a different I guess studio, if you call it that, a different channel, a different studio, but hopefully all those people find new homes to continue on.
And GYC, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think Justin nailed the Dune part. I think that, you know, what they're trying to do is make sure that that Dune movie-going audience, they capture as many of them as they can, and they get them into the show somehow, you know? So it makes sense that they would be attempting to make some kind of connections, at least for people, so that they have a good reason to want to watch the show. As far as Rooster Teeth, you know, it's tough. We talked about this almost in the last two or three podcasts with companies just making big layoffs. And this is somewhere around 150 employees, it looks like, that are going to be let go here. You know, it's tough. Rooster Teeth has been around a while, like Justin said. And, you know, Red versus Blue is, you know, I think in every Halo player's mind, if not, you know, people around, you know, the gaming world. You know, it's the comedy side of gaming in a weird way. And I think a lot of times, you know, when something lasts this long and the median changes a little bit, you have this question of monetization. How are we going to make money? And, you know, after, you know, this last year, they just came to the conclusion that it just wasn't viable. And it's sad to see it go, but, you know, there's a lot of laughs, and I'm sure it'll probably end up living somewhere, a lot of the stuff that was on there through them. So hopefully, you know, we'll have a place to go watch it still. But, you know, it is sad. I hope we can say it's the last round of layoffs that we have to talk about, because it's getting a little much now.
Yeah, it is crazy. And hopefully common sense and cooler heads prevail, and we're going to be able to get things back moving. So the final thing that I have for us tonight, everybody, is an interesting little news report that kind of flew under the radar, that Fox has closed a deal for a new version of Baywatch, and it's coming from producer Fremantle, and it is going to be a new take on the show. The synopsis is: Darren Ocean rescues, pristine beaches and iconic red bathing suits are back with a whole new generation of Baywatch lifeguards who navigate complicated, messy personal lives and this action-packed reboot that demonstrates that the family you're born into, and then there's the family that you find. So it'll be interesting to see how a Baywatch for the new era. I mean, let's be honest, the show was famous for the sex appeal, Pamela Anderson and Nicole Eggert, and everyone running around in their swimsuits. But they also tried to say, okay, let's give something for the ladies. We got Hasselhoff, we got all these guys here. However, we're now in a day and age where, you know, essentially we all know that sex appeal sells in Hollywood, but yet we're not supposed to be so blatant about it. And to basically present more well-rounded characters, which I think they've done a fantastic job of doing, that aren't just attractive to look at, but have, you know, very specific purposes and multiple talents to them. Justin, how do we do Baywatch for the current time frame, and do you think it will be successful?
Oh, that's tricky. That's a really tricky question to answer. I'm going to be completely honest. I don't know. I don't know if it will be successful. And I only kind of look backwards to kind of try to make this, you know, come up with this opinion. There was a newer movie, right, that came out a few years ago.
Correct.
And from memory, you know, whether it was successful or not, I don't think it was, you know, a flop, but, you know, it didn't really make waves either. So, but that said, you know, you kind of look at the original series and, you know, and I'll be completely honest, I haven't really, I mean, it's one of those where I'm obviously aware of it and it's a cultural significance, but I haven't really watched much of it myself. It was a little before my time. You know, it's hard to gauge whether it will be successful or not. And I guess it just comes back to what is considered successful for it. You know, is it something that if it just has like a pretty solid viewership, you know, is that considered successful, or, you know, does it need to make, you know, does it need to be the show that everyone talks about? I mean, I don't think that it will likely reach to that level, but if their success is, okay, we get, you know, two or three seasons or four seasons out of it, maybe that's, I think, something that's doable. About the approach, I think you kind of highlighted what's tricky about it is that, you know, sensibilities are obviously different. So kind of trying to approach that is really going to be the major challenge. And I guess that's, you know, you'll have to wait and see how they approach that, because you can't really, you know, you're going to have to balance both elements. You can't just have, you can't have Baywatch without the sex appeal, but you also can't, you know, really just only have it be that either. So that'll be the kind of delicate thing that they'll have to balance, and I guess we'll have to see how they do it.
And Joey C, your take, please.
I was not expecting another Baywatch movie. I won't say that, or not movie, but series, but anything Baywatch related, really, after the last movie with Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Zac Efron. Now, I think a lot of people ended up liking that movie, despite its, you know, mediocre reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that. Because, like you said, it is sex appeal. It is something that people know, and they know what they're going to get, similar to, like, a Fast and the Furious movie. I remembered something, though, last year. Barbie had a beach scene, and it was with Ryan Gosling, and it was a beach off. And that scene is memorable, and it, I am sure you ask anyone who's seen the Barbie movie, they'll remember that movie. So there might just be a genre there that they're looking to tap into, where maybe they go more White Lotus style, where it's like a mystery with a little bit of murder, but a lot of sex appeal. Or maybe they just go really lighthearted with it, and it's very almost like your, you know, run-of-the-mill CBS or ABC or Fox daytime television soap opera show. Who knows? But either way, I think what's gonna hinge, obviously, is that the main two or three characters that end up running on that beach. Because I think that's the first thing that everyone's going to wait to see for when these trailers do end up dropping eventually.
Yeah, I think that's it. And what I also want to see is you got to do the slow motion group run. I think that's a given. If that's not there, who knows? And, you know, it's funny, a little bit of side note on the original movie that they did. There was some talk at the time that they wanted to consider making it in 3D when there was that, you know, whole 3D rave, and, you know, fortunately we got what we got, but go figure. A lot of great stuff, folks. That is going to do it for us next week. We will be back next week trying to get in a show before I get out of town for a little bit of a travel before CinemaCon and, of course, WonderCon coming up. Just real quick, got an update just a few moments ago that Simu Liu from Shang-Chi is going to be appearing at Phoenix Fan Fusion later this summer. So really good news there. I'm very curious to see who else will be out, and maybe he'll have some news for us in the not-too-distant future about when we will see his character back in the Marvel Universe. Until next time, take care and be well.